Chapter 23. To the land that gave him birth, who has done good service to his country, as his forefathers did, and who will be remembered scores upon scores of years after the worm spread in its corruption, are but so many grains of dust. It was but a week since this old man had stood 4 days upon his trial before this very body, charged with having dared to assert the infamy of that traffic, which has for its accursed merchandise men and women, and their unborn children. Yes, and publicly exhibited in the same city all the while, gilded, framed, and glazed, hung up for general admiration, shown to strangers not with shame, but pride, its face not turned towards the wall, itself not taken down and burned, is the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America, which solemnly declares that all men are created equal, and are endowed by their Creator with the inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It was not a month since this same body had sat calmly by, and heard a man, one of themselves, with oaths which beggars in their drink reject, threaten to cut another's throat from ear to ear. There he sat, among them, not crushed by the general feeling of the assembly, but as good a man as any. There was but a week to come, and another of that body, for doing his duty to those who sent him there, for claiming in a republic the liberty and freedom of expressing their sentiments, and making known their prayer, would be tried, found guilty, and have strong censure passed upon him by the rest. His was a grave offense indeed. 4 years before, he had risen up and said, a gang of male and female slaves for sale, warranted to breed like cattle, linked to each other by iron fetters, are passing now along the open street beneath the windows of your temple of equality. Look! Apostrophe, but there are many kinds of hunters engaged in the pursuit of happiness, and they go variously armed. It is the inalienable right of some among them to take the field after their happiness equipped with cat and cart whip, stocks, and iron collar, and to shout their view halloa. Always in praise of liberty, to the music of clanking chains and bloody stripes. Where sat the many legislators of coarse threats, of words and blows such as coalhivers deal upon each other, when they forget their breeding? On every side. Every session had its anecdotes of that kind, and the actors were all there. Did I recognize in this assembly a body of men who, applying themselves in a new world to correct some of the falsehoods and vices of the old, purified the avenues to public life, paved the dirty ways to plus and power, debated and made laws for the common good, and had no party but their country? I saw in them the wheels that move the meanest perversion of virtuous political machinery, that the worst tools ever wrought. Despicable trickery at elections, underhanded tamperings with public officers, cowardly attacks upon opponents, with scurrilous newspapers for shields, and hired pens for daggers, shameful trucklings to mercenary knaves, whose claim to be considered is that every day and week they sow new crops of ruin with their venal types, which are the dragon's teeth of yore, in everything but sharpness, aidings and abettings of every bad inclination in the popular mind, and artful suppressions of all its good influences. Such things as these, and in a word, dishonest faction in its most depraved and most unblushing form, stared out from every corner of the crowded hall. Did I see among them the intelligence and refinement, the true honest patriotic heart of America? Here and there were drops of its blood and life, but they scarcely colored the stream of desperate adventurers which sets that way for profit and for pay. It is the game of these men, and of their profligate organs, to make the strife of politics so fierce and brutal, and so destructive of all self-respect in worthy men, that sensitive and delicate-minded persons shall be kept aloof, and they, and such as they, be left to battle out their selfish views unchecked. And thus this lowest of all scrambling fights goes on, and they who in other countries would, from their intelligence and station, most aspire to make the laws, do here recoil the farthest from that degradation. that there are, among the representatives of the people in both houses, and among all parties, some men of high character and great abilities, I need not say. The foremost among those politicians who are known in Europe have been already described, and I see no reason to depart from the rule I have laid down for my guidance, of abstaining from all mention of individuals. It will be sufficient to add, that to the most favorable accounts that have been written of them, I more than fully and most heartily subscribe, and that personal intercourse and free communication have bred within me, not the result predicted in the very doubtful proverb, but increased admiration and respect. They are striking men to look at, hard to deceive, prompt to act, lions in energy, Christians in varied accomplishments, Indians in fire of eye and gesture, Americans in strong and generous impulse, and they as well represent the honor and wisdom of their country at home, as the distinguished gentleman who is now its minister at the British court sustains its highest character abroad. I visited both houses nearly every day during my stay in Washington. On my initiatory visit to the House of Representatives, they divided against a decision of the chair, but the chair won. The second time I went, the member who was speaking, being interrupted by a laugh, mimicked it, as one child would in quarreling with another, and added that he would make honorable gentlemen opposite sing out a little more on the other side of their mouths presently. Apostrophe, but interruptions are rare, the speaker being usually heard in silence. There are more quarrels than with us, and more threatenings than gentlemen are accustomed to exchange in any civilized society of which we have record. But farmyard imitations have not as yet been imported from the Parliament of the United Kingdom. The feature in oratory which appears to be the most practiced and most relished is the constant repetition of the same idea or shadow of an idea in fresh words, and the inquiry out of doors is not, what did he say? Apostrophe, apostrophe, but, how long did he speak? Apostrophe, apostrophe, these, however, are but enlargements of a principle which prevails elsewhere. The Senate is a dignified and decorous body, and its proceedings are conducted with much gravity and order. Both houses are handsomely carpeted, but the state to which these carpets are reduced by the universal disregard of the spittoon with which every honorable member is accommodated, and the extraordinary improvements on the pattern which are squirted and dabbled upon it in every direction, do not admit of being described. I will merely observe that I strongly recommend all strangers not to look at the floor, and if they happen to drop anything, though it be their purse, not to pick it up with an ungloved hand on any account. It is somewhat remarkable to, at first, to say the least, to see so many honorable members with swelled faces, and it is scarcely less remarkable to discover that this appearance is caused by the quantity of tobacco they contrive to stow within the hollow of the cheek. It is strange enough to see an honorable gentleman leaning back in his tilted chair with his legs on the desk before him, shaping a convenient plug with his penknife, and when it is quite ready for use, shooting the old one from his mouth, as from a pop gun, and clapping the new one in its place. I was surprised to observe that even steady old chewers of great experience are not always good marksmen, which has rather inclined me to doubt that general proficiency with the rifle, of which we have heard so much in England. Several gentlemen called upon me who, in the course of conversation, frequently missed the spittoon at 5 paces, and one, but he was certainly short-sighted, mistook the closed sash for the open window, at 3. On another occasion, when I dined out, and was sitting with 2 ladies, and some gentlemen round a fire before dinner, one of the company fell short of the fireplace 6 distinct times. I am disposed to think, however, that this was occasioned by his not aiming at that object, as there was a white marble hearth before the fender, which was more convenient, and may have suited his purpose better. The Patent Office at Washington furnishes an extraordinary example of American enterprise and ingenuity, for the immense number of models it contains, are the accumulated inventions of only 5 years, the whole of the previous collection having been destroyed by fire. The elegant structure in which they are arranged is one of design rather than execution, for there is but one side erected out of four, though the works are stopped. The post office is a very compact and very beautiful building. In one of the departments, among a collection of rare and curious articles, are deposited the presents which have been made from time to time to the American ambassadors at foreign courts by the various potentates to whom they were the accredited agents of the Republic, gifts which by the law they are not permitted to retain. I confess that I looked upon this as a very painful exhibition, and one by no means flattering to the national standard of honesty and honor. That can scarcely be a high state of moral feeling which imagines a gentleman of repute and station, likely to be corrupted, in the discharge of his duty, by the present of a snuff box, or a richly mounted sword, or an eastern shawl. And surely the nation who reposes confidence in her appointed servants is likely to be better served than she who makes them the subject of such very mean and paltry suspicions. At Georgetown, in the suburbs, there is a Jesuit college, delightfully situated, and, so far as I had an opportunity of seeing, well managed. Many persons who are not members of the Romish Church avail themselves, I believe, of these institutions, and of the advantageous opportunities they afford for the education of their children. The heights of this neighborhood, above the Piamac River, are very picturesque, and are free, I should conceive, from some of the insalubrities of Washington. The air, at that elevation, was quite cool and refreshing, when in the city it was burning hot. The president's mansion is more like an English clubhouse, both within and without, than any other kind of establishment with which I can compare it. The ornamental ground about it has been laid out in garden walks. They are pretty and agreeable to the eye, though they have that uncomfortable air of having been made yesterday, which is far from favorable to the display of such beauties. My first visit to this house was on the morning after my arrival, when I was carried thither by an official gentleman, who was so kind as to charge himself with my presentation to the president. We entered a large hall, and having twice or thrice rung a bell which nobody answered, walked without further ceremony through the rooms on the ground floor, as divers other gentlemen, mostly with their hats on, and their hands in their pockets, were doing very leisurely. Some of these had ladies with them, to whom they were showing the premises. Others were lounging on the chairs and sofas. Others, in a perfect state of exhaustion from listlessness, were yawning drearily. The greater portion of this assemblage were rather asserting their supremacy than doing anything else, as they had no particular business there that anybody knew of. A few were closely eyeing the movables, as if to make quite sure that the president, who was far from popular, had not made away with any of the furniture or sold the fixtures for his private benefit. After glancing at these loungers, who were scattered over a pretty drawing room, opening upon a terrace which commanded a beautiful prospect of the river and the adjacent country, and who were sauntering to, about a larger stateroom called the Eastern Drawing Room, we went upstairs into another chamber, where were certain visitors, waiting for audiences. At sight of my conductor, a black in plain clothes and yellow slippers who was gliding noiselessly about, and whispering messages in the ears of the more impatient, made a sign of recognition, and glided off to announce him. We had previously looked into another chamber fitted all round with a great, bare, wooden desk or counter, whereon lay files of newspapers, to which sundry gentlemen were referring. But there were no such means of beguiling the time in this apartment, which was as unpromising and tiresome as any waiting room in one of our public establishments, or any physician's dining room during his hours of consultation at home. There were some 15 or 20 persons in the room. One, a tall, wiry, muscular old man, from the west, sunburned and swarthy, with a brown-white hat on his knees, and a giant umbrella resting between his legs, who sat bolt upright in his chair, frowning steadily at the carpet, and twitching the hard lines about his mouth, as if he had made up his mind to fix the president on what he had to say, and wouldn't bait him a grain. Another, a Kentucky farmer, 6 feet 6 in height, with his hat on, and his hands under his coattails, who leaned against the wall, and kicked the floor with his heel, as though he had Time's head under his shoe, and were literally killing him. A third, an oval-faced, bilious-looking man, with sleek black hair cropped close, and whiskers and beard shaved down to blue dots, who sucked the head of a thick stick, and from time to time took it out of his mouth, to see how it was getting on. A fourth did nothing but whistle. A fifth did nothing but spit. And indeed all these gentlemen were so very persevering, and energetic in this latter particular, and bestowed their favors so abundantly upon the carpet, that I take it for granted the presidential housemates have high wages, or, to speak more genteelly, an ample amount of compensation, which is the American word for salary, in the case of all public servants. We had not waited in this room many minutes before the black messenger returned and conducted us into another of smaller dimensions, where, at a business-like table covered with papers, sat the president himself. He looked somewhat worn and anxious, and well he might, being at war with everybody, but the expression of his face was mild and pleasant, and his manner was remarkably unaffected, gentlemanly, and agreeable. I thought that in his whole carriage and demeanor, he became his station singularly well. Being advised that the sensible etiquette of the Republican court admitted of a traveler, like myself, declining, without any impropriety, an invitation to dinner, which did not reach me until I had concluded my arrangements for leaving Washington some days before that to which it referred, I only returned to this house once. It was on the occasion of one of those general assemblies which are held on certain nights, between the hours of 9 and 12 o'clock, and are called, rather oddly, levees. I went, with my wife, at about 10. There was a pretty dense crowd of carriages and people in the courtyard, and so far as I could make out, there were no very clear regulations for the taking up or setting down of company. There were certainly no policemen to soothe startled horses, either by sawing at their bridles or flourishing truncheons in their eyes, and I am ready to make oath that no inoffensive persons were knocked violently on the head, or poked acutely in their backs or stomachs, or brought to a standstill by any such gentle means, and then taken into custody for not moving on. But there was no confusion or disorder. Our carriage reached the porch in its turn, without any blustering, swearing, shouting, backing, or other disturbance. And we dismounted with as much ease and comfort, as though we had been escorted by the whole metropolitan force from A to Z inclusive. The suite of rooms on the ground floor were lighted up, and a military band was playing in the hall. In the smaller drawing room, the center of a circle of company, were the president and his daughter-in-law, who acted as the lady of the mansion, and a very interesting, graceful, and accomplished lady too. One gentleman who stood among this group appeared to take upon himself the functions of a master of the ceremonies. I saw no other officers or attendants, and none were needed. The great drawing room, which I have already mentioned, and the other chambers on the ground floor, were crowded to excess. The company was not, in our sense of the term, select, for it comprehended persons of very many grades and classes, nor was there any great display of costly attire. Indeed, some of the costumes may have been, for aught I know, grotesque enough. But the decorum and propriety of behavior which prevailed were unbroken by any rude or disagreeable incident, and every man, even among the miscellaneous crowd in the hall who were admitted without any Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.